Welcome back to Claw Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. Today we're spending a solid 40 minutes on Kubernetes.
Kubernetes, the container orchestration platform that now runs a huge fraction of the world's production infrastructure.
We're going deep. Architecture, concepts, comparisons, and a genuine debate about when Kubernetes is the wrong tool.
Ryan and I actually disagree on parts of this, which is going to make it interesting.
To be clear, I think the industry over Kubernetes ifies. Emma doesn't agree.
I don't. But let's start at the beginning. The pain that created the need for Kubernetes.
Take yourself back to 2010. You've written your application and you need to get it to production.
The dark ages of deployments.
You SSH into your server. Your one precious, carefully tended server. You copy files. You restart a process. You cross your fingers.
And pray.
That server was set up 10 months ago by someone who left. It has a specific Python version pin because upgrading broke things once.
There are manual patches nobody documented. Environment variables that exist on that machine and nowhere else. Configuration drift built up over months of small changes.
The Snowflake server problem. Every production server becomes unique over time. Try to reproduce it on a fresh machine and you'll fail every time.
The deployment process was often a wiki page nobody kept current. Step 1 SSH in. Step 2 git pull. Step 3 restart and jinx. Step 3 fails because step 1.5 was added months ago and immediately forgotten.
It works on my machine, the most dreaded phrase in software development.
You test locally, everything passes. Push to production, something breaks. Different library versions, OS differences, config drift nobody tracked.
And when things broke at 2 a.m., the solution was SSH in and manually patch it. Which made the Snowflake problem worse.
Now production has an undocumented hotfix applied at 3 a.m. by an engineer who was half asleep.
This was the state of the art for years. And then in 2013, Docker arrived.
Docker's core idea. Package your application with all its dependencies, the runtime, libraries, system packages, into a single portable container image.
Your app runs identically on every machine that has Docker. Build once, run anywhere.
Dev environment matches test matches production. No more snowflakes. It solved environment consistency in a clean, elegant way. This was a genuine breakthrough.
But Docker created a new problem as it was adopted at scale. Hundreds of containers. Dozens of servers.
Which container goes on which server? What happens when one crashes? How do you deploy a new version without downtime? How do containers talk to each other across machines?
Docker Compose helps, runs multi-container apps on one machine, great for local dev. But it does not span multiple hosts. It's fundamentally a single machine tool.
So there was this gap from 2013 to 2014, fantastic packaging, no real orchestration story.
Container orchestration tools emerged, Docker Swarm, Mesos, and others. But none of them had the depth of what Google was about to release.
Because Google had been running containers internally for over a decade. Their internal system, Borg, managed containers across their entire global infrastructure.
Billions of container launches per week. Every hard problem in container orchestration had been solved at a scale nobody else could approach.
And in 2014, they open-sourced Kubernetes, built on Borg's lessons, donated to the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, under the Linux Foundation.
Vendor neutral from day one. AWS, Google, Microsoft, Red Hat, VMware, all major contributors. That vendor neutrality is a huge part of why it became the universal standard.
The core promise. Tell Kubernetes what you want, it figures out how to make it happen, and then keeps it that way permanently.
I want 3 copies of this web service, each with 2 CPUs and 512 megabytes of RAM, spread across different physical machines. Kubernetes makes that happen.
One copy crashes, it starts a replacement. A physical machine goes down, it reschedules those workloads to healthy nodes. Automatically. No human intervention required.
That promise, declare desired state, trust the system to maintain it, is the foundation of everything Kubernetes does.
Let's talk about how it actually works. Kubernetes is a container orchestration platform, manages the full lifecycle of containerized applications, deploying, scaling, keeping healthy, connecting, updating, rolling back.
The model is declarative. You write YAML describing desired state. Not run this command, that would be imperative. Instead, this is how things should look.
Kubernetes continuously reconciles reality to match your description. This is a fundamentally different mental model from deployment scripts.
A shell script is imperative, does things in sequence, and if step 5 fails, you're in an unknown intermediate state. A Kubernetes manifest describes the end state.
The system figures out the steps, retries failures, and keeps checking forever. It's not a one-time thing.
Let's go through the architecture. A cluster has two parts, the control plane and the worker nodes.
Control plane is the brain, makes decisions, stores all state, runs all control logic. Worker nodes are where your actual applications run.
Control plane has four key components. First, the API server. The front door to Kubernetes. Every interaction goes through it.
Every kubectl command you run, every request from internal components, every external system integrating with Kubernetes, all through the API server. It's a REST API.
Second, etched. A distributed key-value store holding the entire cluster state. Every pod, deployment, service, all in etched. The single source of truth.
If ect dies without backups, your cluster state is gone. Backing up ect in production is non-negotiable.
Third, the scheduler. When a pod needs to run but has no node assigned, the scheduler picks the right one. Evaluates available CPU and memory, affinity rules, taints and tolerations.
Sophisticated placement logic. It then writes the node assignment back to ect.
Fourth, the controller manager. Runs a collection of control loops, deployment controller, replica set controller, node controller, endpoints controller, and more.
Each one watches the API server, compares actual state to desired state, and takes actions to close any gap.
And critically, this never stops. These loops run continuously, every few seconds, forever. Self-healing is just the reconciliation loop doing its job.
Worker nodes have three components. The kubelet is an agent on each node, watches for pod specs assigned to its node, ensures those containers are running.
Kubeproxy manages network rules on each node, iptables or IPvS rules implementing service networking. When traffic goes to a service's cluster IP, Kubeproxy routes it to the right pod.
And the container runtime, usually container today, actually starts and stops containers. Kubernetes delegates this via the container runtime interface, the CRI spec.
So Kubernetes doesn't depend on Docker specifically. Containered, CRIO. Any CRI-compliant runtime works fine.
When Docker was removed as the default runtime a few years back, there was a lot of panic. But for most users, nothing changed. Containered was already what Docker Engine used internally.
Kubernetes and Docker are related but distinct. Docker creates images and runs containers on one machine. Kubernetes orchestrates containers across many machines.
Let's do the three-way comparison people always ask about. Kubernetes, Docker, Terraform, used together constantly, but their relationships genuinely confuse people.
Three tools at three completely different layers.
Docker packaging and running containers. Dockerfile describes your image. Docker build makes it. Docker run starts a container. Excellent at environment consistency. Scope is one machine.
Docker Compose extends this to multi-container apps on one machine, web server, database. Cache together. Perfect for local dev, doesn't span multiple hosts.
Kubernetes is the level above. Orchestrates containers across a cluster of machines. Handles scheduling, scaling, self-healing, zero downtime deployments, service discovery, load balancing, configuration management, storage orchestration.
Kubernetes doesn't care how images were built. Docker, Builder, Kaniko, any OCI compliant image works.
Terraform is a completely different layer, infrastructure provisioning, creates cloud resources, VMs, networks, load balancers, databases, DNS, IAM policies. Declarative HCL code calling cloud APIs.
Terraform creates the infrastructure Kubernetes runs on. The typical workflow, Terraform provisions an EKS cluster on AWS, VPC, subnets, EC2 node groups, IAM roles, the EKS control plane.
Then Kubernetes deploys your applications onto that cluster. Terraform built the platform. Kubernetes manages the workloads.
Three layers, Terraform handles infrastructure. Kubernetes handles containers. Docker builds the images those containers run from. Each layer has its own concerns, they don't overlap.
The shipping analogy I love. Docker is the standardized shipping container. Holds any cargo, works on any ship.
Kubernetes is the port's logistics system, decides where containers go, maintains the right count, replaces any that go overboard.
Terraform is the company that built the port, the cranes, the docks, the physical infrastructure.
Complementary tools. You use all three in a real production setup.
Now the controversial section. Ryan, make the case against Kubernetes.
I want to be clear, I'm not anti-Kubernetes. It's remarkable engineering. But the industry has a Kubernetes by default culture that causes real pain for teams that don't need it.
What kind of pain specifically?
Kubernetes is genuinely, substantially complex. The learning curve is steep and long. To be operational, you need pods, deployments, services, ingress, namespaces, RBAC, network policies, persistent volumes, storage classes, config maps, secrets, Helm, customize, kubectl. That's before monitoring and security.
That complexity reflects the hard problems it's solving at scale. It's not arbitrary.
Agreed. But the cost benefit is wrong for many teams. The YAML complexity tax, for one microservice you need a deployment, service, ingress, config map, secret, maybe a horizontal pod autoscaler and a pod disruption budget. 6+ files, all correct, all in sync.
Helm and Customize manage that complexity. Nobody hand maintains all those files in a real production setup.
Helm adds its own learning curve and its own failure modes. And here's the thing, there are much better tools at small scale.
Like what?
Railway, Render, fly.io, push a Docker image, they run it. Scaling, HTTPS, deployments, all handled. No YAML, no cluster expertise, no 2 AM debugging sessions.
You give up control and accept vendor lock-in.
At small scale, absolutely worth that trade-off. You should be shipping product, not managing node pools.
What about AWS ECS with Fargate?
ECS Fargate is excellent for many workloads, containerized deployments, auto-scaling, load balancer integration, no cluster management needed. Often simpler and cheaper than Kubernetes.
But you lose the sophisticated deployment strategies, canary releases, blue-green, B testing at the infrastructure level.
True. But how many three-person startups actually need canary deployments? Be honest.
Probably none. But they'll need it eventually.
The premature scaling trap. We might handle 1 million users someday, let's use Kubernetes now. Most startups never reach that scale. And even if you do, migrating to Kubernetes when you're a 20-person team is far less painful than running it with 3 engineers still learning it.
The migration is painful though. I've watched teams spend 3 months moving from ECS to Kubernetes.
3 months with a team that now understands their actual requirements and has the capacity to handle the operational burden properly. That's the right time to do it.
There's also the operational overhead, even with managed Kubernetes. You still manage node pool upgrades, networking configuration, IAM security groups, storage classes.
Yes. Even EKS isn't fully managed. You're still making decisions and handling upgrades. That's real overhead.
When does Kubernetes make clear sense to you?
5 or more microservices. 10 or more engineers. Need for canary or blue-green deployments. Multi-cloud or hybrid requirements. Regulated industries needing workload isolation. when you've genuinely outgrown simpler tools and feel the pain.
And I'd push back on the complexity argument with the current state of managed services. GKE Autopilot manages node pools automatically. You describe pods, Google provisions the right nodes, you pay per pod, not per node.
GKE Autopilot has genuinely impressed me. The gap between managed Kubernetes and ECS has narrowed significantly.
EKS with Fargate mode is similar. Fargate nodes provision automatically for your pods, no node group management.
Fair. The managed services have improved substantially over the last 3 years.
So the honest answer is, start with the simplest tool that works for your scale, but know that Kubernetes is where complex multi-service applications eventually land.
That's the synthesis. Sequencing matters more than people realize.
Let's go deep on the core concepts, the actual building blocks you need to understand.
Smallest deployable unit, a pod. Not a container, a pod. One or more containers always scheduled together, sharing a network namespace, same IP address, can talk to each other on localhost.
In practice, most pods have one container, but sidecars are common. A log collector alongside the main app, an Envoy proxy for a service mesh, or an init container that runs setup before the main app starts.
Critical thing about pods, they're ephemeral. Disposable. A pod can die at any moment, node failure, rescheduling, a deployment rolling out. Never store application state in a pod's local file system. It will be gone.
Above pods, replica sets. Ensures a specified number of pod replicas are always running. One dies, the controller creates a replacement. Simple, effective. Rarely used directly.
Because deployments are what you actually use. They manage replica sets and add rolling updates and rollbacks. The standard way to run stateless applications.
You declare, I want 3 replicas of my API using image version 2.1.0. When you update to version 2.2.0, the deployment does a rolling update, creates new pods before killing old ones. Zero downtime.
And if version 2.2.0 has a bug, kubectl rollout undo immediately takes you back to version 2.1.0. One command.
For stateful applications, databases, Kafka, Elasticsearch, you use stateful sets. Each pod gets a stable, persistent identity. MyDB0, MyDB1, MyDB2. Each has its own persistent volume.
Ordered creation and deletion matters here. For a primary replica database cluster, the primary needs to start first. Stateful sets create in numeric order, delete in reverse.
Daemon sets ensure exactly one pod runs on every node. New node joins the cluster. A daemon set pod appears on it automatically.
Classic uses, Fluent or Filebeat for log collection, Prometheus node exporter for hardware metrics, CNI plugins, security scanners. You want one of these agents on every node by definition.
Jobs for run to completion tasks. A pod that runs until it succeeds then stops. Database migrations, batch processing. Cron jobs for scheduled work.
Now networking, where a lot of the power and complexity live.
Core problem. Pods are ephemeral and restart with new IP addresses. You can't configure your app to call a specific pod IP, it'll change.
Services solve this. A service is a stable network endpoint in front of a group of pods. Fixed cluster IP address and DNS name that never changes. Traffic is load balanced across healthy matching pods.
For service types, cluster IP, the default, is internal only. Your front end calls your back end via cluster IP. Nobody outside the cluster can reach it. This is what you want for microservice to microservice communication.
Node port exposes on a specific port across every node, useful for debugging, not recommended for production. Load balancer provisions a real cloud load balancer, the standard way to expose services externally.
But load balancer is expensive if you have many services. Every service gets its own cloud load balancer.
Which is why Ingress exists. One load balancer at the edge. An Ingress controller, Nginx Ingress, Trafic, the AWS ALB Ingress controller, routes requests to the right backend based on hostname or URL path.
A pi.emiap.com goes to the API service. A pp.emiap.com to the frontend. admin.emiapp.com to the admin panel, all through one load balancer with TLS termination handled at the edge.
Much more cost-effective. And you can add rate limiting, authentication, and other edge logic to the ingress controller.
Configuration management. Config maps for non-sensitive data, feature flags, API endpoint URLs, log levels, mounted as environment variables or as files in a pod.
Secrets for sensitive data, passwords, API keys, TLS certificates. Stored separately from config maps.
Important caveat. Secrets are only Base64 encoded by default. Base64 is not encryption. For real security, use sealed secrets to encrypt before storing in Git, or integrate with an external secret manager, AWS Secrets Manager, HashiCorp Vault, GCP Secret Manager.
Namespaces are virtual boundaries within a cluster. Separate environments, dev, staging, production, or separate teams. Resource quotas and RBAC can be scoped per namespace.
One physical cluster, multiple logical environments.
Let's walk the full reconciliation flow end-to-end.
You run kubectl apply fdeployment.yaml. kubectl sends the YAML to the API server. Server validates schema, checks RBAC permissions, writes desired state to ECT. Nothing has happened to containers yet.
The deployment controller notices the new object in ECT, creates a replica set. The replica set controller creates pod objects. These pods exist in ECT as records but have no node assignment.
The scheduler watches for unscheduled pods, evaluates all nodes, available resources, affinity rules, taints, assigns each pod to the best node by updating the pod object in ECT.
The kubelt on each assigned node sees the new pod, pulls the container image from the registry, and starts the container via the runtime. Then runs readiness probes, typically an HTTP health check.
Until the readiness probe passes, the pod isn't added to service endpoints. This prevents traffic going to a container still starting up.
Once it passes, kubeproxy updates network rules across nodes. Traffic starts flowing to the new pod.
Container crashes. Kubelet detects it, restarts automatically. Node goes down. The node controller marks it not ready. Pods get rescheduled to healthy nodes.
The loop runs forever. Always reconciling actual to desired. This is what makes Kubernetes resilient without anyone having to explicitly build that resilience.
Let's make this practical. How do you actually get started with Kubernetes?
For local development, kind, Kubernetes in Docker. Runs a full cluster as Docker containers on your laptop. Multi-node cluster in under 2 minutes. Fast to create and destroy.
This is what I use for local testing. It closely mirrors production behavior and has no VM overhead.
Minikube is the classic option, runs in a VM, excellent documentation, been around since the early days. Good for learning.
K3S from Rancher is a lightweight distribution, under 100 megabytes. Good for edge devices, IoT, or low-resource laptops.
For production, use managed Kubernetes. Managing your own control plane, running ECT at high availability, handling Kubernetes version upgrades, is a serious operational burden. Let the cloud provider handle it.
EKS on AWS, the dominant enterprise choice. Complex setup, you pay for the control plane plus EC2 nodes. Deep AWS ecosystem integration with solid enterprise support.
GKE on Google Cloud, my recommendation for teams with a free choice. Google invented Kubernetes, their engineers drive major development. GKE Autopilot handles node management automatically.
EKS on Azure, right for Microsoft ecosystem teams. Azure Active Directory integration and enterprise service integration are solid.
Basic workflow, write your Dockerfile, build the image, push to a registry, ECR on AWS, Artifact Registry on GCP, Docker Hub for public images.
Write a deployment YAML, run kubectl apply f, then kubectl get pods to see state, kubectl logs pod name to see output, kubectl describe pod pod name for debugging events.
Essential kubectl commands, apply to create or update, get to list resources, describe for detailed info, logs to stream output, exec to shell into a running container.
And for deployment management, rollout status to watch an update in progress, rollout undo to immediately roll back to the previous version.
Helm is the package manager for Kubernetes. You'll encounter it almost immediately. Charts bundle all the YAML for an application into a versioned template package.
Installing Prometheus Cert Manager, Nginx Ingress, one Helm install command handles the whole thing. Your own apps as Helm charts with separate values per environment is the standard production pattern.
K9S is the terminal UI for Kubernetes, live view of the cluster, drill into pods, stream logs, exec into containers. Once you start using K9S, you'll rarely type raw kubectl for day-to-day exploration.
Lens is the graphical alternative, a desktop app that connects to multiple clusters, good for teams that prefer a GUI.
Let's synthesize the mental model that makes Kubernetes click.
Kubernetes is a continuous reconciliation engine. Describe desired state. The system watches actual state. Control loops run forever, detecting divergence, taking the minimum actions needed to close the gap.
This is fundamentally different from imperative deployment tools. A script says, do this now and stops. A Kubernetes manifest says, things should always be this way, and the system enforces it continuously.
From this one principle, every feature flows. Self-healing. Loop detects crashed container, restarts it. Not a special feature, just the loop. Rolling updates. Change desired image, controller replaces pods gradually. Scaling. Change replica count, pods appear or disappear.
For me, Kubernetes is the Linux of cloud infrastructure. Steep learning curve, but once you understand it, the mental model transfers everywhere. Any cluster, any cloud, the same principles apply.
And the expertise is genuinely portable. AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, on-premise, Kubernetes is the common platform. Learn it once, work anywhere. Even if you're not running Kubernetes yourself, understanding it helps you understand the infrastructure world around you.
My final position, be honest about where you are. Start simple, ECS, Railway, FLY.io. Graduate to Kubernetes when you've genuinely outgrown simpler tools and have the team to support the operational burden.
My final position, when you're ready, and you'll know because you'll feel the pain of what Kubernetes solves, the investment pays back many times over. The ecosystem, portability, and deployment capabilities are unmatched.
Core concept summary, pods are ephemeral compute units. Deployments manage rolling updates for stateless apps. Stateful sets for stateful workloads. Daemon sets for node-level agents. Services for stable networking. Ingress for HTTP routing.
And the control plane API server ECT scheduler controllers is the reconciliation brain that makes all of it work, running continuously forever.
One sentence, Kubernetes is a system that continuously works to make what exists match what you declared you wanted. That idea, at production scale, is why it won.
To get started, install Kind, run Kind Create Cluster, Kubernetes cluster on your laptop in under 2 minutes. The official docs at Kubernetes.io are genuinely excellent, especially the concepts guide.
Find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review if this was useful.
See you next episode.
See you next time.